dose of reality coming from Harry Enten, the most, you know, it's interesting. The commentary on CNN and the commentary on MSNBC has this pronounced, you know, left-wing liberal tilt.
Pro-Democrat, anti-Trump, right?
Yeah. And they're very, at CNN, their idea of balance is that you have anti-Trump Democrats, and so it's important that you also bring in anti-Trump Republicans. Yeah. Yeah. So you have a balanced approach.
Yeah.
Though Scott Jennings is the one guy who is a conservative.
And on MSNBC, it's Steve Kornacki, who really just is interesting because he's not guided by ideology. He's a numbers guy, and he just tells you what the numbers are telling us, usually polling numbers. And it's the same thing with CNN and Harry Enten, their polling guy. It shows such a clear difference between their commentators, who are all guided by either partisanship or by ideology, almost all liberal left ideology. You know, think Joy Reid. Think the utterly vacuous Nicole Wallace. And you know, these are the kinds of people who all you're going to hear is snark and dime store analysis from people who are remarkably shallow. How did they get this job in the first place? Commentators. But they're polling people, the people who are analyzing the polls, they are not guided by ideology, so they often don't come down in the same place. Now, what is interesting about what I'm about to play here from Harry Enten from CNN is I have been telling you that 3 weeks in, 23 days and counting, Kamala Harris has not sat down for an interview with anybody. Nor has she done a press conference. And the media don't appear that worked up about it. Because as they see it, you know, the more that Kamala is simply defined by her speeches and by her television ads, the better. That's fine. You would think the media would be howling in anger. And by the way, you don't see Tim Walz doing, her running mate doing interviews either. They're keeping him away from the press. You see J.D. Vance all over the place. You see Donald Trump calling in to programs and doing Q&A. But you don't see the other side. And so Kamala is basically at the top of her game right now. It might get a little bit better at the convention because it's not a convention, it's a coronation. And everybody's on board, and all the people, you know, within the Democratic Party orbit, they're going to be holding, if they're on the left, let's say the climate activists, they're not going to pay any attention to the fact that she's flipped her position on fracking. The open borders people are going to stay mum about the fact that she is now talking about tougher border enforcement, if you can believe that. every major position where she's, you know, the health care, the people who have been pushing the Democrats to have socialized medicine, they are not going to publicly disagree with Kamala Harris now saying she opposes doing away with private health insurance and supporting a nationalist government-run health system, which she does, by the way. She's been very clear about it. Think Pramila Jayapal, okay? Pramila, Seattle congresswoman, very partisan and very ideologically left. And all she can do is praise Kamala. When you bring up these other things, oh, you know, she'll just, you know, dismiss those as not important at this time. That is because Kamala, that is because Pramila wants to win. She can get, you know, Kamala to flip again. In other words, she understands that she's flip-flopping for the purpose of getting elected. So once she is elected in Pramila's eyes, she'll get her to flip again because that's her real position. So there's that game going on. And so far, again, it's working. It shows how remarkably disciplined the Democrats are when it comes to politics, far more than Republicans. And all the major player, all the major interest groups are holding back their criticism. And you would think that with all this adulatory publicity, with all of this unified, exuberant, enthusiastic support from the party, thank God she's not Joe Biden, now we have a chance, that she would be outpolling Donald Trump and starting to pull away. And there are polls that show that. And that's where Harry Enten comes on and says, not so fast.
I just want to take a step back and sort of point out we've kind of been here before. Mm-hmm. So August 13th, how far were the polls off in Michigan, Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin? And this is in 2016 and 2020. Trump was estimated both times around and by significant margins. Take a look here. In 2016, the average poll in those states that I mentioned, those Great Lake battleground states, Trump was underestimated by 9 points on average at this point in 2016. How about 2020? It wasn't a one-off. Look at this. He was underestimated by 5 points on average. And, of course, Kamala Harris's advantage in those New York Times Siena College polls were 4 points in each of these key battleground states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. The bottom line is this. If you have any idea, if you're a Kamala Harris fan and you want to rip open the champagne bottle, pop that cork, do not do it. Donald Trump is very much in this race. If we have a polling shift like we've seen in prior years from now until the final result, Donald Trump would actually win. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I am saying that he is very much in this ballgame based upon where he is right now and compare that to where he was in prior years.
Okay. Now think about it. This is how she is doing without facing media scrutiny. Without facing negative ads that point out where she really stood, where she really stands on issues and how extreme she is. Okay, you get to her record. You get to where she really stands as she conveyed time after time in her own words. Those ads have not appeared yet. You hear them on my show. I mean, I'm not running commercials, they are not there yet, but I'm running you the audio of where she really is. So you're getting a preview of what's to come. But by and large, this is where the general public so far are just going on what they see. And even with all that wind at her back, favorable publicity and all, she is ahead of Donald Trump by less in the battleground states, the three big ones, by less than Biden was 4 years ago and far less than Hillary Clinton 8 years ago. Now, let's continue.
I certainly heard the Harris campaign saying, we have to keep fighting.
Absolutely.
This is definitely not over. All right. Let's talk about enthusiasm and how that translates actually. We are quite a ways out, again, 3 months about.
Yeah. You know, yesterday I was mentioning, you know, the enthusiasm for the Democratic ticket was up. Yep. But that enthusiasm is not the same thing as going out to actually vote. And there's a different question, which essentially says, how certain are you actually going to go out and vote? And this is the top range. almost certain to vote. Again, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. This is among registered voters. Look at this. Look at Kamala Harris now compared to where Joe Biden was back in May. In fact, 62% of Joe Biden voters said they were almost certain to turn out and vote. Now,
it's gone down.
It's actually gone down a little bit. I would call this in the same general area at 61%. But it's basically unchanged. And look at Donald Trump.
Can you believe that? In the three battleground states that the Democrats have to, Republicans have to take one of them, Democrats have to take all three. The enthusiasm, I mean, I'm going to go out and vote for this person, is actually 1 point less for Kamala Harris than it was for Joe Biden.
He was at 58% in May. He's actually gone up a little bit now. He's at 60% now. Again, basically no real change. So the bottom line here is, yes, there may be more enthusiasm for Kamala Harris, but the fact is we're not seeing that necessarily translate in the almost certain vote. And one little other note, Sarah, yeah. I will note this. Donald Trump is more popular today than he was on August 13th in either 2020 or 2016. So the bottom line is, yes, Kamala Harris is doing better in the polls, but there's a long way to go. The polls can shift. The almost certain vote hasn't actually shifted, and Donald Trump is more popular than he was at either 2016 or 2020 at this point.
Okay. So that's where things stand. That as great as this has been for the Democrats, when it actually translates into voting behavior, different story begins to emerge. So, you know, wait until the media scrutiny actually starts. Wait until we begin to see the negative ads on Kamala. The Trump team had prepared, you know, all the negative ads against Biden. Biden himself was a walking negative ad. I mean, he was hurting himself just by being in, when he was in the media, when people saw him. But now we're going to see, with all the advantages she has, what happens when she faces greater scrutiny. In other words, after the convention next week, the honeymoon will be over, and it was far too long than it should have been if the media were doing their job. Even without much media scrutiny, her running mate is already floundering. And it's because of his own previous actions and comments regarding his military record. And he defended it yesterday. We'll play those remarks coming up here on The Commute. And I'll ask you the question, do you think that he is effectively answered the issue about his war record, or lack of war record when he said he was in war? Because it's a central issue relating to his character. But that's not all. He's also facing criticism for his judgment, namely how when there was a real crisis, i.e. a riot, a big one, worst ever in state history, how he dithered and how he hesitated and how hundreds of millions of dollars of damage was done because he did. And then there's the issue of his extremism on issues, where basically he's a West Coast liberal governing in a Midwestern state. And that's now coming forward. So, you know, character, judgment, and extremism. Tim Walz is carrying more and more baggage each and every day. So we got that and plenty more coming your way. And, of course, no, I didn't forget. It's Wednesday, so it's legendary lyric time. You know how this contest works. It's a real favorite of KVI listeners. I read you the lyrics of a famous song. And when you hear those lyrics going in or out of commercial break, be caller number 10, identify the song or the artist, and you get some nice prizes. Isn't that right, radio legend Mark Christopher?
Yeah, good comeback prize giveaway here because some people are hoping that we get this back. Of course, we got Daniel's Broiler, always a favorite here of the legendary lyric contest here. $50 gift card here, U.S. Prime Steak, other specialties. They do wonders with chickens, fresh seafood, four locations throughout Seattle. Just have a look at the website, danielsbroiler.com. Look at the menu. Look at the party rooms if you're thinking about that already for the holidays. John, this was popular a few months ago here when we started getting into the concert ticket opportunity here. Washington State Fair Monday, September 2nd.
Yeah.
We had tickets
Labor Day weekend.
Right. We had tickets for the Happy Together Tour. We've got two tickets. Rather than tell you the names of the bands, because people are like, I don't know, let me just play the hits. Every song clip here, these bands are all together one night, September 2nd, two tickets. Here we go.
Turtles.
So Badfinger. The Association, Badfinger.
Nice.
The Cowsills.
Oh, the Cow.
The Association.
The Association.
There are the Vogues, not done.
What?
This is all the Archies, all in one, on one.
Ron Dante will be there, who did the vocals for the Archies. All those hit songs on stage live, all the groups there, plus other hits they did.
Cool.
Win these two tickets.
Very nice. On Labor Day.
Yeah.
On Labor Day.
It's like a jukebox right there.
So here is your lyric. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. One more time. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. When you hear that lyric, be caller number 10. We have a lot of great stuff coming up on the commute. Hey, how much are you really paying because of Jay Inslee's cap and trade artificial gas tax and home heating tax? How much are you really paying because of the Climate Commitment Act? We've got the receipts for you here on the commute with Carlson. A homeless camping ban goes into effect today in Lakewood because of that Supreme Court decision. And a Washington Post reporter actually asking the White House press spokesperson why the Donald Trump and Elon Musk interview was allowed to take place. We'll play it for you if you think that sounds unbelievable. We'll play you the audio. All right, it's 6:27 now, the John Carlson Show. Philip J. Vandervoort III with the first social media sweep of the morning. Go for it, Phil.
I'm going to take a little social media license here. And I'm going to go off the board a little bit because I want to get an update going on this race for the primary election results and the Public Lands Commissioner. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And the latest results that came through last night, your prediction ended up coming true a little bit. The third place person in the Public Lands Commissioner race, Sue Cool Peterson, did narrow down the difference between the second place finisher, Dave Upthegrove. She gained about 261 votes yesterday after the two or three previous election results were providing about a 5,000, no, it was 8,000 something vote swing for Dave Upthegrove to advance into second place. So she did get a gain of 261 votes yesterday, but she's still in third place. Now, there's one other primary election result that I think deserves a little bit of attention, and this is in the race for U.S. Senator. Maria Cantwell's the incumbent. Dr. Raul Garcia is the leading Republican that is going to advance to the primary election. Did you realize, John, in the race for U.S. Senator in Washington, there was a candidate that prefers the Socialist Workers Party?
Oh, yeah.
You did? Okay. The person's name is Henry Clay Dennison. Henry Clay Dennison, running with the parenthetical reference, prefers Socialist Workers Party, has racked up, as of last night, in a state of roughly 7 million-ish people, I think there are 4-something million voters
almost
in the state.
Almost 8 million now, and over 4 million registered voters.
Over 4 million. racked up a grand total of 7,620 votes out of an available 4 million votes.
Sure.
Good Space Guy, as a comparison,
yes,
has way more than double what the Prefers Socialist Workers Party candidate has generated. So Good Space Guy, who is essentially, and I don't want to be off-putting here, but essentially kind of an afterthought,
a punchline
to Seattle elections. That guy has more than double what the Socialist Workers Party guy has. So why does anyone pay attention to this Socialist Workers Party crowd? For some reason, it keeps happening in Seattle and the Olympia legislature, but this is the crowd from The Stranger. And statewide, they managed to generate 7,000 votes total. But these socialists are driving the King County Council right now. Mm-hmm. They're driving the Washington House of Representatives in Seattle. And these socialists have managed to co-opt the Democratic Party. And nobody in the Democratic Party pushes back. And that's an infiltration that is a sad reflection on the Democratic Party in this state.
The answer to your question could be summed up in one word: concentration. There are very few socialists in Washington state, but they're concentrated in areas where they have outsized political impact.
Well,
so
yeah,
if they were dispersed throughout all 39 counties, yeah, but if they're in a few counties like Seattle within King County, Olympia within Thurston County, they're going to have more political clout.
Now, the bigger dysfunction is that they are co-opting the Democratic Party so that they don't have to be identified as socialists,
yep,
which is what they're bringing to the Democratic Party.
That's part of it. You're listening to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Tim Walz defends his military record. You decide if he's doing it effectively or not. That's straight ahead on The Commute with Carlson. All right. 24 minutes to 7 o'clock. John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. So Tim Walz has not sat down to justify his actions from his military days. Now, Tim Walz was in the National Guard for 24 years, and he had extended his stay before the war in Iraq. But once it was made clear after the Iraq war began that National Guard units were being deployed and that his unit was going to be deployed, he left early. He retired early. Retired before his six-year commitment, his re-up, was over. Said he wanted to run for political office. And his defenders say that he didn't know his unit was going to be deployed. And the people who served with him at that time said, oh, he knew perfectly well. He was notified. They all were notified in their unit that they would be deployed. They just hadn't been given their specific orders yet. So there is that. Then there is his tendency to exaggerate, saying that he carried weapons of war in war. He never spent a day in a combat zone. And then claiming a higher rank than the rank he actually retired with. So this has made his life less than pleasant. He's getting basically, again, this is not the Republicans going after him. These are people who served with him when he was in the guard and who felt that he left them in the lurch. He was the senior non-commissioned officer in his unit. And he retired early while they went forward. And they're not pleased about it. So this is kind of like, do you remember when John Kerry was running for president and the people who served on him with him on swift boats led the charge against him being unfit for command? In fact, that was actually the name of a book written by someone who served on a swift boat with Kerry in Vietnam. Kerry was only there for less than 3 months. Had three Purple Hearts, very controversial Purple Hearts, which we won't get into. It don't have time for it. But the bottom line is he was qualified to leave early. But the bottom line is it was the people who served with him who basically saved George W. Bush's reelection by raising authentic questions about his fitness for command and for the things that he said and did when he was in the Vietnam and the things that he said and did after he got out. Now Tim Walz is facing some of these same types of accusations. And J.D. Vance, who served with distinction in the Marine Corps in a combat zone, is being none too bashful about echoing their sentiments. Anyway, here's Tim Walz yesterday addressing the issue of his military service. He was speaking before the largest government employees union, the American Federation of State and Federal Employees, yesterday afternoon.
Then in 2005, I felt the call of duty again, this time of being service to my country in the halls of Congress. My students inspired me to run for that office, and I was proud to make it to Washington. I was a member of the Veterans Affairs Committee and a champion of our men and women in uniform. I'm going to say it again as clearly as I can. I am damn proud of my service to this country. And I firmly believe you should never denigrate another person's service record. To anyone brave enough to put on that uniform for our great country, including my opponent, I just have a few simple words. Thank you for your service and sacrifice.
Okay. Do you think that he effectively addressed the issue of his military record there? Do you think that he's helping, to now close the door on that issue? See, I don't, because he didn't address any of the controversies. He has said nothing about any of the details, nothing about the fact that he actually went over his superior's head in order to get approval for retiring early. That he did know that his unit was going to be deployed to Iraq, which would have actually given him experience in a combat zone, which he had not had in 24 years of guard service. Nothing about mischaracterizing himself carrying weapons of war in a war zone. He's simply saying you should never denigrate a service member's record. Well, wait a minute. What if he misrepresents that record? I mean, if someone misrepresents, let's say, their college education, You know, we've had people who've claimed to have degrees that they didn't have. Are you denigrating their education, or are you simply pointing out discrepancies between what they claim and what is reality? If someone makes claims about what they've done in the business world, their achievements, their accomplishments, the success they've had in business, that turns out, on closer analysis, maybe misrepresenting whether their company's made as much money as he claims or did as well. Would you be denigrating his service as a businessman? No, you would be pointing out, yeah, he's saying one thing and he actually did another. So if I don't think you should denigrate someone for serving in the military, certainly not. You should be gratified in thanking them. That on that point, I would agree with Tim Walz. You should thank someone for their service and sacrifice. But if they are attempting to profit politically by misrepresenting their record, well, then that's a different story. And I'm very even-handed about this. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're Democrat, Republican, whether you're running for statewide office or national office or local office. If you are making claims about what you have accomplished or done in the military that turn out to be not true, it's not wrong to point that out. So I don't think he's put this issue behind him at all. I think, and would not be surprised, that there's more to come. The Democrats are acknowledging, some Democrats are acknowledging that they didn't do such a good job of vetting him on this issue, which is surprising because it did come up briefly when he ran for Congress. Well, now that he's running for national office, nationwide office, it's going to get a lot more scrutiny. It's 6:47 on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Our good friend Lars Larson, our noon to three host here on Talk Radio 570 KVI, joining me. And when we come back, another example of how the party of democracy is trying to keep you from voting for people they don't want you to vote for. It's coming up at 7:05 on the John Carlson Show. That's not our legendary lyric. It's John Lennon and the Beatles. Our legendary lyric for today, when you hear it, be caller number 10, because some great prizes are awaiting you if you are caller number 10. Again, when you hear this lyric going in or out of commercial break sometime in the next hour and a half, be caller number 10. Here we go. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. There's your lyric. And here's your noon to three host, Lars Larson, checking in with us. Good morning, Lars.
Good morning, John. Do any reporters, and I mean primarily TV and radio reporters in the Seattle Metro, have what it takes to go to Bob Ferguson and demand an explanation for why he tried to torpedo four ballot initiatives? Now, he didn't bring the lawsuit, but he decided to keep everybody who was involved in getting those ballot measures on, Brian Haywood, Let's Go Washington, in the dark.
Yes.
And he, in fact, argued that before the Supreme Court, said none of those people know, you know, that we're arguing this case today. He admitted it. He confirmed it in his arguments. And I think I have an answer, but I got it from our friend Brandy Cruz. Why did the notoriously liberal Washington Supreme Court, credit to Brandy, Why did they say, no, you're not going to impose a really tough standard, an over-tough standard for confirmation of voter signatures? Mm-hmm. And I hadn't thought of this interpretation, but okay. She said the Supreme Court realized if you apply that standard, then you have to apply that to voters as well and to other initiatives. But if you apply it to voters and all of a sudden we're looking for the illegal aliens among the registered voters of Washington, the Supreme Court of Washington did not want that tougher standard applied.
Yeah, I don't know if that is the case. Here's what I do know.
Sure.
The criteria used to validate the signatures for the four initiatives was the same criteria they've been using since the 1970s.
Yep.
And a ardently liberal organization whose leaders are donors to Bob Ferguson, by the way.
Yep, that's an important point.
They filed a suit to say that all of a sudden this standard is inappropriate, is that it doesn't address how to validate signatures. So you need to throw all these four initiatives out. And the state Supreme Court, which is ardently liberal, looked at their argument and said, no.
No. Don't get too far past the point of saying Fergie should have conflicted himself out. A lawyer who's going to represent one side against a lawsuit brought by somebody who's giving money to his political campaign. Mm-hmm. And all the gutless weasels who call themselves reporters need to go to Ferguson and say, why didn't you conflict yourself out? You clearly have a conflict of interest. I'm half tempted to file a bar complaint against Ferguson for representing one side while taking money from the other. That's unethical.
Well,
it's disgusting.
Lars, something is going to happen today, and be listening at 7:05 because I'm going to announce it again. Something is going to be done in reaction to what you've just been talking about. And welcome back, hour number two of the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 3 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning on this 14th day of August, halfway through the week. And so glad to have you here because this is Wednesday, Legendary Lyric Week, and we've got some great prizes for you. Isn't that right, radio legend Mark Christopher?
Yeah, we got the Daniel's Brother Again certificate here, $50 certificate to enjoy any one of the four locations here, Bellevue, downtown, Leschi, there, Lake Washington, also Lake Union. Just look at the website. It's a great website. You can do reservations there at danielsbrother.com.
And?
John, we're back, and I'm glad we were able to do this here. A lot of people were like, oh, I wanted to win those tickets. Will you get more? The Happy Together Tour comes to the Washington State Fair September 2nd. John, they're so excited. They're calling the phone already. No, you got to wait till you hear the lyric. Let me give you an example of the bands. We got the Turtles that'll be there, Badfinger, the Cal Sills, the Association. Here are some of the hits. Badfinger. How about this one? Cal Sills. The Association will be there. Those are the Vogues and?
Okay, man. All on one bill.
Ron Dante sang for the Archies. They'll all be there for one night. Again, the tickets for September 2nd, Washington State Fair, right there at Labor Day weekend.
That'd be fun. And it's on Labor Day itself, if I'm not mistaken. It's on Monday, September 2nd. So here's your lyric. When you hear it going in or out of commercial break, be caller number 10, okay? Here we go. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. There you go. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And wait until you hear the story behind this hit. That's another.
When you hear the song title that has those lyrics.
Yes.
Wow.
So, again, just be caller number 10. All right. We got our good friend Brian Haywood from Let's Go Washington joining us. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Morning. How are you? I'm doing well.
I'm doing well as well, but I've got to play this for you. This is inadvertent humor. It happened on the Steve Colbert Show, you know, the late night comic.
Yep.
He had Caitlin Collins from CNN on his program, and they were talking about Donald Trump. And here is what happened.
Trump is kind of been thrown on his heels by this, and he's not really sure how to go after Vice President Harris. He knew his attack lines on President Biden. He really has struggled with how to go after someone who's 20 years younger than him, who is a different gender, a different race. It's kind of been this moment where he has not been able to coalesce around a single attack line.
I know you guys are objective over there, that you just report the news as it is. No, I know. CNN makes a... I know
that's supposed to be a lab line?
I wasn't supposed to be, but I guess it is.
He tries to compliment CNN for being objective, and the audience laughs. Oh, I thought you'd enjoy that.
I do.
All right.
It's not dissimilar from what's going on with the media right now in Washington.
Well, and we want to talk about that because, and this is getting some traction. There is growing anger about something that is utterly unprecedented. I've never seen it before, that you basically were the product. You and Let's Go Washington, the four initiatives, were all hanging in the balance as there was a lawsuit to throw them off the ballot. And the attorney general, the attorney general's office was... defending the Secretary of State, who was actually the party being sued, and he did not bother to inform you that your initiatives were at risk of being erased.
Pretty incredible. The more I'm studying more and more, and the Attorney General just came out with 7 tweets trying to defend himself. And it's quite interesting. It's clear that he knew that they should inform us, because one of the things in the documents that were provided by the Attorney General's office to the courts, they noted in there very specifically that Let's Go Wah and I had not been notified. They knew that. And he came out yesterday with a tweet. First of all, he's calling this partisan. What's the wording that he's using? Is
you're partisan.
Some partisans are trying to create a fake conspiracy by accusing us, and I was sort of taken aback by that, because we've been very careful for this not to be partisan, and for the Attorney General to put the partisan label on, well, that suggests that he's a partisan because he sees a political divide somehow.
Well, basically, he's projecting. He's accusing you of doing what he's doing.
Completely.
The other thing is, again, for our listeners who were not privy to this, I found out about it when I was taking a long weekend. This story broke last Friday. There is a group of progressive leftists, very well-financed, who filed a pair of lawsuits to try and prevent voters from being able to vote on the initiatives. The pro-democracy forces were trying to prevent you from voting on 4 initiatives that had qualified for the ballot, that had, by the way, qualified handily for the ballot. And their argument was the signature verification process was insufficient. Well, it's the same process we've been using in Washington since the 70s. And again, none of these initiatives, you know, just barely qualified. They all qualified easily. They were just looking for some sort of a technicality that they were hoping an ideologically sympathetic Supreme Court would agree with, so they could drive them all off the ballot and prevent voters from having a voice. In November, the Attorney General's office is duty-bound to defend the law as it exists, and Bob Ferguson never bothered to notify Let's Go Washington or Brian Haywood that their initiatives were hanging in the balance for months.
And this you can ask the question, well, is it normal for them to notify? Because I wasn't the defendant. It was actually the Secretary of State who was being attacked. And so it's a legitimate question to say, well, did he have an obligation? Was he supposed to? And from everything that I can tell, it is a very well-established practice that anyone that's named specifically or any party to a lawsuit like this needs to be informed so that they can have input into the process.
And so that
not only were we named,
right?
Specifically, my name was in there, and there were accusations of wrongdoing that were included in their lawsuit, and still the attorney general didn't feel it was important to let me know.
Again, I just think that is unethical. His initial response was, I think, very revealing. His initial response is, what do you mean it wasn't public? All they had to do was check the court docket.
Yeah. Yeah.
As if people check the court docket to find out what's going on in the world. This from a guy who's probably set the world indoor record for sending out press releases.
His second response is even worse. This one that he just came out with, he said, hey, I totally notified the caucus leaders. I told them. So then I have a question. Well, who exactly did you tell? What exactly did you tell them? And when did you tell them? Right? Because it's quite possible he told caucus leaders something in a privileged session, and therefore he couldn't even – I couldn't get the access anyway. But I don't know why he thinks telling the caucus leaders. That's part of his partisan view. I'm not the caucus leader. I'm not part of the Republican Party.
Well, wait a minute. Were they mentioned in the suit? No. Were you?
Yes.
Well, I think that answers – I think you're higher on the pecking order to be informed than the caucus leadership of the legislature. So he's digging himself even deeper. And there is going to be a rally where the press conference Attorney General Ferguson should be holding is going to be held in front of his office, his Seattle office, 800 Fifth Avenue today at 3 p.m. And Brian Haywood, I am going to be there.
Thank you, sir.
For this. Absolutely. And I want to invite listeners, if you would like to show up and show your support for Brian Haywood, Let's Go Washington, and demand accountability for Bob Ferguson, then please be there today. Again, you'll notice you're not seeing a lot of eminently respected attorneys who are rallying around Bob Ferguson on this, because this is utterly unprecedented, and his ridiculous, preposterous, borderline comical initial response, well, if he wanted to know what was going on, he should just check the court docket, tells you how inappropriate what he did was, and he knows it. So, again, that rally is today at 3 in the afternoon, 800 Fifth Avenue. So you're a ways away from the tents and the fentanyl corridor. And it's going to be 3 p.m. This afternoon, and I am going to be there along with Brian Haywood. Would love to have you there as well, showing support, Brian.
I appreciate everybody that can come out. I mean, what's interesting behind all of this is the fear that the whole state has of this attorney general. You mentioned lawyers. I've got lawyers telling me this is unprecedented. This is crazy. He shouldn't be doing this. This is how he's done it is. Normally he would recuse himself. He would very publicly recuse himself from something like this because the people bringing the complaint are big donors of his. He hasn't done that. But then when I say to the lawyers, okay, would you come and talk with me? They're like, oh no, I don't want him to go after me.
Yeah. Right? Well, I'll tell you what, your courage over the last year plus in taking on not just the power brokers in the attorney general's office, but in the one-party regime in the legislature and Jay Inslee, is something that needs to be called out. It takes guts to do this. I know a lot of very wealthy Republicans who shy away from these kinds of conflicts, not because they don't think they're right, but because they know they're right and they know that they'll have a target on them politically if they get involved. Well, Brian Haywood chose to get involved. So I tell you what, if more people step in and support him, that means there's many, many more targets, so many targets that it becomes difficult to win. That's how you take these people on. Stop being afraid of these people.
Yeah.
They respect you when they know that you will defend yourself. And that is what Brian Haywood is doing and fighting for what he believes in and what he's fighting for, what you and I believe in. So by all means, show up at the rally today in Seattle, 800 Fifth Avenue at 3 p.m. And show up at Freedom Fest on Saturday. That's at 4:30 in the afternoon. That's free. You could bring the family to that because that's not a protest or a rally. That's a party, Brian.
That's right. We're going to celebrate freedom and sort of try to bring people into a place where they can be who they are without having to feel afraid. I've been pondering this whole process, and I know you're talking about the Freedom Fest, and I want people to go there, but one of the big things that's going on here is straight-up voter suppression. The attempt by Defend Law to stop this vote, instead of going out there and making the case that they could come out and say, hey, you're wrong, here's why, you shouldn't vote for these, and spend your money doing that. And that's a fair fight. But to go behind in sneaky ways, file lawsuits to stop people from even having the right to vote, that's voter suppression. And there should be a price that's paid. The SEIU and the teachers union, and mm-hmm. I think they're taking this money from teachers' union dues.
Yep.
They're taking it from their paychecks to stop people from having a voice. And there's that's shady, and some people should be ashamed of what they're doing.
Yes. Hey, one man with courage makes a majority, and that man is Brian Haywood, and he's giving voice to the majority. That's why they're opposing him, because they know these initiatives have an excellent chance of passing. That's why they didn't want you to vote on them. And their case was so pathetically weak that even the ardently liberal state Supreme Court voted unanimously to dismiss the suit. Didn't think it was, I mean, it was just, there was no merit to it whatsoever. But that's how desperate they are to try and stop you from having the voice that Brian Haywood has provided for you in the form of these four initiatives. So rally with us today, 3 p.m., downtown Seattle, 800 Fifth Avenue. That's the office of the Seattle office of Bob Ferguson. And then let's all party on Saturday at Freedom Fest. More details for that at letsgowashington.com. Brian Haywood, thanks again for joining us this morning on the John Carlson Show.
Thank you, and I look forward to seeing all your listeners out there today and then again on Saturday.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Thanks a lot. It is 21 minutes after 7 o'clock. Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with a social media sweep. Good morning. Hope this isn't a prelude to next week's Democratic convention in Chicago.
I'm just thinking about all these songs of Chicago mentioning.
Anyway, back we are on the commute with Carlson. It is 26 minutes after 7. That's not our legendary lyric. Our legendary lyric is as follows. Again, when you hear it, be caller number 10 to 206-421-5757. Some great prizes this week for you. The lyric is, I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more
than I'll ever know. That's your lyric. When you hear it, be caller number 10, 206-421-5757. All right, Phil. What's going on in the social media world?
A local story and then a national story. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Headline and the post coming from the Seattle Times website. The headline for the story says, South Lake Union streetcars shut down for many weeks. This is the sometimes known as the slut, the South Lake Union trolley.
Mm-hmm.
The tweet says, King County Metro, which runs the streetcar there in South Lake Union, says it can't get the right parts from overseas to fix an electrical breakdown, and then that means that the trains ain't running. So I'm no economics scholar here, and this story is paywalled, so I can't read the whole Seattle Times story, but I'm willing to bet that somehow this supply chain problem is going to get blamed on Donald Trump. Now, that's just my guess, just a little theory there. I have no other hard science to this conclusion, just my gut instinct that somehow, some way, this has got to be Trump's fault.
By the way, this is why electric buses, including electric school buses, are having trouble. Because when something goes wrong and they need parts, they face the same problem. We've heard many reports out of Pierce County and others, other places. Yeah.
Currently not in stock, seeing online, for many parts needed for that.
I'm sure that Joe Biden has no role whatsoever in this ability to get parts manufactured overseas into the United States. I'm sure it has nothing to do with that. Now, earlier this week, the big news was Elon Musk, Donald Trump talking together, kind of an interview conversation on the X Spaces video platform. Elon Musk has posted this. Happy to host Kamala Harris on an X Spaces interview, too. And I know that, John, you've been talking about this is 20-odd days since Kamala Harris did any sort of an interview. And let me just add this. She doesn't have to. She cannot portray herself any better than the abiding national news media have already portrayed her. So it's funny. Journalists and newspaper writers are they're in unions, right? And along with Hollywood film and TV writer unions, they're all bargaining right now on contracts for stronger protections from AI-influenced scripts and content. The AI influence impacts on their jobs.
Understood.
It also impacts their work settings. But
we have no
shortage of newspaper, news website, TV editors, and reporters who are artificially juicing their coverage of Kamala Harris or artificially downplaying their coverage of Trump. And they're not worried about that type of artificial results with their work. So there's another double standard that is both deceptive and dangerous when it comes to accurately informing the public. You heard it here from Phil.
All right. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we've got another example. Jesus, this just doesn't stop. That the party of democracy, the party that says they're trying to save democracy, democracy's on the ballot. The party that says they represent all that is trying to prevent you from having the right to vote for a candidate. We'll tell you what is going on. No, it's not Donald Trump. We'll tell you what's going on right around the corner. It involves the Washington State Democratic Party right after this. Let me guess, Herman's Hermits? That's the Stones. It's only rock and roll, and I like it. But that's not our legendary lyric, is it, radio legend Mark Christopher?
Not with lyrics like you were sharing. I don't think that was lyrics that fit the song.
The lyrics for today's legendary lyric contest. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know.
Because it's only rock and roll, and I like it.
Yeah,
maybe it would work.
Wait a second. Are you doing a mashup now?
No, Keith, that doesn't really work. Let's try something else.
Babies would cry if they saw this video of what they were looking like at the time of recording this song.
Anyway, when you do hear that lyric going in or out of commercial break, be caller number 10, because you win a pair of tickets to a really cool reunion show.
Happy Together Tour.
A Happy Together tour, hits from the 60s from played by original bands from the 60s.
Turtles Association, Cal Sills, just to mention a few.
Yes. A lot of these people, you know, walked out of Providence Point to be able to make this concert. So, you know, you don't want to miss that. And some of these songs have like recycled and become hits again and favorites, you know, more recently. So anyway.
Put it this way, my daughters know the lyrics better than I do, a lot of these songs, and they're in their early 30s. So
that's what you have going for you when you are caller number 10 to 206-421-5757. Got to play it sometime in the next 45 minutes. So it's and you have the gift card to Daniel's Broiler as well. Okay. We have heard time after time after time that this election is all about saving democracy. That's what Joe Biden is his mantra. This isn't just an election about leadership. This is about saving our democracy, saving our democracy. And I began to scratch my head about the party that's trying to save democracy when they were trying to prevent Donald Trump from even appearing on the ballot, which doesn't appear pro-democracy to me, denying people the right to vote for him. But a very partisan Democrat, all Democrat, Supreme Court in Colorado and the Secretary of State in, what was it, Vermont or Maine, tried to just on her own prevent Trump from being on the ballot. And there were other states, as this went to the U.S. Supreme Court, who were poised to drive him off the ballot, which we wouldn't have seen. We would have seen this for the first time since the 1864 election, when southern states refused to put Abraham Lincoln's name on their ballot.
Civil War stuff.
So anyway, the Supreme Court came to the rescue of sanity and shut down that effort. We'll call it an aborted effort to drive Trump's name off the ballot. And so now they're trying to keep Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s name off the ballot. Here in Washington State, there are the top two rule we have here in Washington. It used to be the top Democrat and top Republican went to the final. Now it's the top two finishers, regardless of what party, even if they're in the same party, go to the ballot. That holds true for all Washington state elections. For instance, for legislature, for governor, for attorney general, you know, state auditor, et cetera. But for president, you can have as many candidates in the general election as qualify. And there's currently 11 campaigns that are looking to do so. Three socialist parties, the Libertarians, of course, the Justice for All Party, that's Cornel West, the author of the book Race Matters, and a former Harvard and Princeton professor, the Independent Party, the Green Party, of course, Jill Stein up running again, and Bobby Kennedy's We the People Party. He's got a running mate. He's the most organized, the best financed of all the independent third-plus parties. And there is a concerted effort to throw him off the ballot. They have temporarily thrown him off the New York State ballot. Democrats are challenging him in North Carolina. A state judge just 2 days ago prevented an attempt by the North Carolina Democratic Party to drive Bobby Kennedy off the ballot in that state. There had been ballot access challenges to keep him off the ballot in Hawaii, in Idaho, New Jersey, and Utah. And the Kennedy campaign has won all of those challenges. Well, now it's Washington State that is stepping forward. Washington State Democrats, instead of letting people vote for who they want to vote for, are saying that the signatures submitted by Bobby Kennedy's We the People in support of his nomination were not technically collected at one or more party conventions as required by state law. All you have to do to make the Washington ballot is have 1,000 signatures. And you can have more than one convention. And the conventions are, you know, they don't all have to be like you're used to seeing convention. They could be very loosely based. But Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s people submitted not just 1,000, but again, four times as many, 4,181 signatures, 4,181 signatures. They're saying those weren't formal nominating conventions, so the signatures should not be accepted. So they're trying to keep him off the Washington ballot. Here we go again. We don't like who you might vote for, therefore you should not have the right to vote for that person. I've been telling you all along, the people who say they're trying to save democracy don't care about democracy. All they care about is getting and retaining power, and if they have to undermine or even sabotage democracy in order to keep their power or win an election, that is what they will do.
And there are a lot of prior examples of this. Berrien, there was an attempt to, can we have the city residents vote on sanctuary city status? That got reversed.
No, you cannot.
There was the mobile injection drug site for Seattle, or was it King County at large? One of those two things. And they collected signatures to get it on the ballot. And the people that wanted to have the mobile injection sites, the Department of Health people, the activists that all wanted that, they took that to court, and a King County judge threw that out. And then there are the examples of the state legislature that are reversing some of these earlier Tim Iman initiatives and things like that. So this adds to a long list of Democrats that are reversing either the chance to vote on something or the will of the voters in the past because they didn't like it politically.
And again, we just got done talking to Brian Haywood, where a very well financed by mega millionaires organization that is called Defend Washington, which means defend the political left, just tried to drive all of the four initiatives off the November ballot on utterly specious grounds, so patently absurd that the state Supreme Court unanimously tossed out their lawsuit, their legal challenge, claiming that names were not verified correctly. The process was flawed on verifying the names, which, by the way, they had, like Bobby Kennedy, far more names than necessary. But this is how they play the game. Don't let people vote on things they might actually like. There is nothing wrong with these initiatives, nothing out of the mainstream. And by the way, I think that's why they're trying to keep people from voting for them, because they know they will vote for them, which is interesting because they claim that these initiatives are outside the mainstream, and that their inside polling information that they don't want to share shows they're unpopular. Really? Then why are you trying to keep people from voting on them? So just one more reminder that when someone says that they're fighting for democracy, they might very well be trying to do precisely the opposite. It's Boeing time on the John Carlson Show. 7:47, The Commute with Carlson. Talk Radio 570, keep the John Carlson Show. That's not our legendary lyric. Our legendary lyric is, I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. When you hear that lyric going in or out of commercial break, be caller number 10. Tell us the song or the artist, and you've got some great prizes coming your way. Concert tickets and a gift card to Daniel's Broiler Steakhouse. All right. Here's a bizarre question. This was in the White House at the morning press gaggle with Karine Jean-Pierre, the spokeswoman for the administration. Reporter asking about the Donald Trump-Elon Musk interview on Monday night on Twitter X. Listen to this question.
Elon Musk is slated to interview Donald Trump tonight on X. I don't know if the president is going to tune in. Feel free to say if he is or not. But I think that misinformation on Twitter is not just a campaign issue. It's a, you know, it's an America issue. What role does the White House or the president have in sort of stopping that, or stopping the spread of that, or sort of intervening in that? Some of that was about campaign misinformation, but, you know, it's a wider thing, right?
Yeah. No.
What? A reporter asking what is the White House willing to do to stop misinformation, meaning information they disagree with, during the Donald Trump, Elon Musk interview? How do we stop this from happening? This is a report, a journalist asking this question? Anyway, to her credit, here's Karine Jean-Pierre's response.
So, and you've heard us talk about this many times from here, about the responsibilities that social media platforms have when it comes to misinformation, disinformation. Don't have anything to read out from here about specific ways that we're working on it, but we believe that they have the responsibility. These are private companies, so we're also mindful of that, too.
Yeah, so is the Washington Post. Hey, what's the White House doing to stop misinformation from appearing in the Washington Post?
They would have lots of examples to choose from, I'm sure.
Yes.
Or a few, at least.
Again,
a few.
That's an American journalist for an elite newspaper, for a powerful newspaper, a reporter for the Post, asking what is the White House doing to stop this Elon Musk, Donald Trump conversation from going forward? There might be misinformation. Wow. The drama grows because normally we have had our legendary lyric song winner by now. And yet, for some reason, radio legend Mark Christopher has yet to play the lyric of the day going in or out of commercial break, which is, I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. That is a lyric from a legendary song, a fascinating story behind it, which we'll relate as well later on. When you hear that lyric going in or out of commercial break, be caller number 10, 206-421-5757. And what awaiteth them when they are the 10th caller, Mark Christopher?
Yeah, we figured because the prize is just a wanted item. When we had it before here months ago, people said, oh, I hope you can get more of these tickets for this concert. It's the Happy Together Tour coming September 2nd. That's Monday, Labor Day weekend, the Washington State Fair. Bands will be on stage. You know them for these songs. The Turtles.
That's the Turtles, yeah. It's Badfinger trying to sound like George Harrison.
There you go.
Oh, Cow's Hills.
You're doing good. Keep going.
The forerunner of the Partridge Family. The Association.
Okay.
I don't know that one. This is the Archies.
Yeah, Ron Dante. The Vogues were in there, too.
The Vogues. That
all
was...
on stage one night and all the hits beyond those hits as well. So two tickets for that. You got to have the steak to go with it. Daniel's Broiler, good at all four locations. Danielsbroiler.com. Look at the menu. Think about your reservation in advance for dinner there. You can do it online. Maybe you want to do a holiday party. They do have those rooms available.
All right. So there you have it. You're going to hear it sometime in the next 25 minutes, half hour. Or so. It's got to happen soon. We're running out of runway, Mark Christopher.
Okay. Might have to kick it into the next show. I don't know.
No, there's no Markley Van Camp and Robbins legendary lyric. It's all got to happen in the Carlson Show. Okay. Let's start local, shall we?
Wait, did you give the lyric?
Yes, I thought I had.
No, you had not done the lyric.
I think I did the lyric.
Oh, you did.
Yeah. I'll do it again.
Give him a bonus here.
I hear babies. Well, then let's do it so Todd will know what it is. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. There you go.
All right.
That's the lyric. The number is 206-421-5757. And here's our guest, Todd Myers, Washington Policy Center Environmental Director. Good morning. How are you, Todd?
I'm doing great this morning.
Good. I've got 14 topics to go over with you today. Are you ready?
Okay. Only 14?
Yeah, we're going to try and tighten our belt here a little bit. We have to start with what I told listeners you and I would be discussing, which is can we get an accurate idea of just how much money the Climate Commitment Act is costing Washington families?
So, yes, we did a calculation on that because a couple of things. One, some people are getting these rebate checks from their utility of $200, which the governor and other folks hope will convince voters to keep the CO2 tax in place when they vote in 2117, which would repeal the CO2 tax this fall. So they're handing out these checks. They required those checks to go out by September 15th. It's interesting timing. These are one-time checks that just happen to appear in an election year. They're not before or after. Next year, we don't get these checks. And the rule also requires that any utility, when they send out these checks, must include the state-funded logo of the Climate Commitment Act on the letter. So those checks were going out, and there were some stories about how great it is. So I decided to say, okay, is this actually paying for what, you know, the costs are? Are people, right, you know, are people actually benefiting from this?
By the way, who's getting these checks again, Todd?
It's about 10% of utility customers based on income. So it's targeted toward lower income folks.
Okay.
So we looked at the costs, and we looked at just two things based on gasoline, the increase in cost of gasoline, and then also natural gas. There are some costs in electricity. They are smaller. There are some other incidental costs, inflationary costs on the increase of cost, everything else because of transportation costs. Those are very hard to calculate. So we just stuck with direct gas and natural gas. All right, with that long prelude, what we found is that for an average family of two cars driving an average amount with, you know, a good fuel mileage, in 2023, it cost them about $631 extra for the year. A low-income family.
Wait, just to drive? Just in gasoline prices or in overall energy prices, Todd?
Gasoline and home heating for natural gas.
Okay.
And that's two cars. So let's say you only have one car. Let's say you're lower income and you only have one car. And your natural gas home heating is less, either because you have an apartment or a smaller house or something like that. Even those folks paid more than $300 in taxes, extra taxes because of the CO2 tax. So even if you received a $200 rebate on your utilities, you still paid far more than you get back. It's basically bribing people with their own money.
And don't you have to vote? Doesn't the initiative
that strikes down the Climate Commitment Act, doesn't it have to fail?
So they, at one point they thought about giving people rebates, next year, contingent
right.
on the money flowing in.
Okay.
That was turned down. What they did now is they said all the checks have to go out by September 15th. So even if you got a check, you can still vote and the way you want and reduce your taxes in the future.
So in one way, this kind of reminds me of what Richard Nixon pulled in 1972, sent out notices that Social Security benefits were going to be increased, and they went out in mid-September of 1972 when he was running for re-election. The difference there, of course, is that they're going to get an increase in benefits for a program they pay into. Here, they are getting essentially a bribe to vote no on Initiative 2117, because you get this low income, one time only,
right?
Break. And it has to go out with the logo of the Climate Commitment Act, right?
Yeah, the letters to that, and a lot of people who are not eligible for the rebate also got letters. Also with that logo, so advertising it. But again, I mean, the evidence, I mean, it's very clear that this is an election year effort because these rebates were not included in the original piece of legislation that was passed in 2021, and they don't exist next year. Governor Inslee has repeatedly opposed rebates. So there have been proposals in the past offset, to do carbon taxes where you would reduce taxes elsewhere. He has consistently opposed that. So, you know, he has opposed these kinds of rebates every year, except the year when his CO2 tax is on the ballot.
So let me see if I got this right. The same governor who said, and we've played it on tape dozens of times, Todd, that the Climate Commitment Act would raise the price of gas pennies, mere pennies. In fact, the price might go down. That is a quote, by the way.
Yeah.
Is now saying, after gasoline went up, is it 43 cents a gallon?
Last year that was true. It's lower now, but yes, last year that was true.
There is absolutely no assurance whatsoever that striking down this tax that raised the price of gasoline so much would have any impact on the price of gas going the other way.
And that's their newest argument, which is that if you remove, and the CO2 tax is the largest tax, energy tax in state history. And so they're now claiming if you eliminate the largest energy tax in state history, there's no guarantee the prices would go down.
Of energy goes down.
Yeah.
Why does anyone listen to these people?
Well, and in fact, we have more evidence
that
they know that this is a lie. So previously I found quotes from 2014 when the governor proposed a very similar system, and they were very open and admitted before the legislature that it would increase taxes or increase gas prices by 40 cents a gallon. And then in 2018, the governor also offered a flat carbon tax, which is a slightly different system, but basically has the same results. And his policy advisors said that the prices would be passed along to consumers. And this is the quote. While the tax would be paid by power plants and fuel importers, Inslee's staff predicted some of the costs would pass on to consumers and result in a hike in the price of electricity, natural gas, and gasoline. So they know. That was in 2018 that they said that, just 3 years before the latest CO2 tax passed. They have known this, that this would increase prices. They just decided that, being dishonest, because people don't like new taxes, they decided the only way to get this is to be dishonest. And this claim that if you repeal the tax, it won't cut energy costs is just part of that pattern.
Yes. By the way, someone who did call it right and accurately was a policy analyst for the Washington Policy Center named Todd Myers.
it's, you know, the thing is that it's not complicated. This system is in California. The system has been used other places. All we have to do is to look at the history of what happened. There is a direct amount of CO2 that is emitted every gallon of gas. It's not difficult math. We have a history. We know we can look at it. And that's all I did. I'm not a genius. I just applied that math. But, you know, there are so many political incentives to be dishonest that overwhelmed. And I think some in the media got bullied into believing that. But now we're seeing the results.
Well, no, number one, you're an independent thinker, and too many people in the media were what I call herd thinkers, as in H-E-R-D. They were following the herd instead of doing some independent thinking on their own. And the other is, quite bluntly, you were honest, and the Inslee people were not. You know, it's not that they're dumb. And that you're smart. This isn't a matter of IQ. This is a matter of who's going to tell the truth when the data clearly show that there's an increase, and you told the truth. By the way, I heard that reporters were urged not to talk to you. Can you tell me the inside skinny on this?
So I have been critical of the huge amount of money that we subsidize solar panels with in Washington State. And just for disclosure, I'm arguing against my own interest because the house that we purchased a few years ago has solar panels. And so I get solar energy, and by state law, we sell it back to Puget Sound Energy. So, but I have argued repeatedly that should not be the case because, one, solar panels are typically owned by people who are more wealthy. And second, Washington State, in particular, Western Washington, is one of the worst places in the country for solar energy. So I've argued against this. Well, not surprisingly, that has earned me a bad reputation with the solar industry in Washington State. And so in Tumwater, they were installing a solar powered car charger. And I was asked about it by a reporter. And I explained why the math didn't work and why this was a huge waste of money. It's $100,000 to install this car charger that produces very little energy. And so the reporter, like a good reporter, reached out to the city of Tumwater and said, what do you think about these concerns? The city of Tumwater then turned around and reached out to the Solar Industry Energy of Washington. And they sent an email to the reporter saying, I will talk to you, but I would tell you, do not print anything at the Washington Policy Center, and I would discourage you from being associated with them in any way at all. They have lots of red flags with the industry. Well, I'm sure I do have lots of red flags with the industry because, I disagree with the state and taxpayers wasting money to line their pockets for a technology that doesn't work very well to reduce CO2 emissions or to provide energy. There are lots of other things we can do that are better for the environment, that produce more energy and reduce more CO2 emissions. So it was very funny. The other thing that they said was, if you want to talk about what a great job government is doing, then, and the quote was, let's party. Well, of course, I'm sure that they want to be the PR firm for governments who are lining their pockets. But yes, that was, it's not, I'm used to this. I get lots of what I call love letters from people who either have financial or emotional benefits from appearing to do things for the environment, even if those things don't actually help.
And again, this was a lobbyist for the solar industry, you say?
Yeah, a board member of the Washington Solar and Energy Industry Association.
Wow. Just an eye-opener about how easily bought off these people are if they're making money. Don't talk to anyone who's going to confuse you with facts when we're, giving you the party line over here.
Well, I would just tell you there's a punchline to the story, which is that I have been trying to find out, I've said, solar is not very good in Western Washington, but I have been trying to find out from Tumwater and from other places where these same chargers have been installed, how much energy they actually produce. And so far, no city that has installed these has been able to tell me how much energy these things actually produce, which just, I mean, like, we're spending $100,000 on these things. And this one is at a park, right? It's not critical infrastructure. It's a luxury for people who can afford expensive cars. And yet, when I say, all right, show me the results, show me the benefits of this, nobody can do that. So it's just, it's really a perfect example of how badly our climate and environmental policy is at actually showing that they're doing good things for the environment.
Todd Myers, Washington Policy Center. Read his stuff. Great stuff at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org. Read his blog there. It's great stuff. Todd, thanks again very much for appearing on the show after a particularly brutal Seattle Mariner game last night. We hope things get better there.
Yes, they will. I'm certain they will. Thanks. Todd, always nice to chat with you.
Todd used to work for the Mariners franchise, folks. Anyway, good hearing your voice, Todd. Appreciate it. We'll be talking again soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
It is 21 minutes after 8 o'clock. Oh, Philip J. Vandiver, the third's favorite segment of the day. Social media from socialists. Lines open on the John Carlson Show, 206-421-5757. Good morning. Show Talk Radio 570 KVI. Congratulations, Sam and Stillicum. You are our winner of the legendary lyric contest. And of course, that song, What a Wonderful World, which when I first heard, and by the way, I heard it on the soundtrack of the movie Good Morning Vietnam.
Vietnam, yeah, Robin Williams.
In the late
movie.
80s.
Yeah.
I will talk about the song. There's a fascinating story behind this song.
The backstory you shared off the air this morning is brilliant.
Yeah, I thought it was a song from like the 40s or 50s. It was actually made in one of the most turbulent eras in American history, 1967. Anyway, and 67, 68 was that era there. Anyway, I don't want to step on Philip J's social media from Socialist, so I'll tell the story of the song here in a moment. But, Phil, what do you got?
Let's get into a post that comes from NPR commentator, occasional guest on NPR. She's from Oregon, names Rachel Bitkofer. And she posted, Republicans will turn our country into Mexico, where everything is corrupt because everything takes bribes and patronage. And then she cites some Apple News story that says Ben Sasse appears to have turned the University of Florida into a gravy train for his pals. And I thought, yeah, that's a story that Bob Menendez and I will have a good laugh at, turning the United States into Mexico with corruption. And then this one comes from the White House by way of a social media account that I follow. The social media account I follow is called @SpokaneRising, and so it's an anti-Trump, pro-Democrats social media account. And they posted a WhiteHouse.gov fact sheet that is dated yesterday, August 13th, 2024. Fact sheet, Biden-Harris administration takes new actions to lower housing costs by cutting red tape to build more housing. And I thought, hey, that's pretty cool. That only took 3 years and 8 months to pull that one off. If this was such an important thing to do, to create housing, more housing supply, and bring down the cost of housing, why did the Biden-Harris administration wait until August of 2024 when they took office in January of 2021? Odd question, right?
Actually, a pretty darn good one.
The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. I want to hear the story about What a Wonderful World.
Yes, because a lot of people say, you know, 67, 68, I don't remember that song from that era. There's a reason for that. And you'll be hearing it in just a moment on the John Carlson Show. Also, boy, I'm glad I didn't do this story yesterday. I was going to talk about how the San Francisco DA is getting flack because she is charging people who blocked the San Francisco bridge with misdemeanor. She's charging them criminally, these protesters, Palestinian protesters.
in the Seattle area, local prosecutors in SeaTac are not going to be prosecuting the people who blocked the airport. Anyway, we'll have those details straight up as the commute continues on a busy news Wednesday. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Our legendary lyric today was from a beloved song that is familiar to so many people called What a Wonderful World.
The how many story times have we been at a how many times have we all been at a wedding and this is one of the songs that gets played, everybody dances to,
fill
right?
the dance floor every time. Yep.
So it was released in 1967. Written, recorded, released in 1967. It was written by Bob Thiel and George Weiss. George Weiss said he wrote the song specifically for Louis Armstrong because he was inspired by Satchmo's ability to bring people together of different races. Okay, we're talking 1967, turbulent times. Riots in several cities. L.A., Watts went up in 65, Detroit in 67. Mm-hmm. And this was a song written to try and basically bring people together, reassure people, hey, I know everything going around, it's still a wonderful world.
Can I just, one little footnote.
Yeah.
The reason why they were looking at Louis Armstrong, in 1964, he knocked the Beatles out of number one during Beatlemania with this.
Really? Not expect that.
Okay, go ahead, John.
So, it did become a hit song. It charted in 1988 when it appeared on the soundtrack for the hit movie Good Morning Vietnam, starring the late, great, and much missed Robin Williams. So why didn't it chart when it was released? Well, it did in Great Britain. In fact, it was the number one song of the year 1968 in Great Britain. The number one song in Great Britain was What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong. It did not even make the charts in the United States. The reason behind it is that the president of ABC Records didn't like the song and wouldn't promote it. The story behind it is right out of a movie. Armstrong was playing Vegas. Louis Armstrong was playing the Tropicana. So he chose to record the song at a nearby recording studio, and his show went till midnight. So at 2 a.m., they had the musicians, it's obviously an orchestra backing him up, and began rolling tape. Larry Newton, the ABC Records president, shows up for the session and he's hearing the music and he's, I don't like this. Wait a minute. We need something a little more up-tempo here. I mean, you know, like Hello Dolly. That's the song, you know, that he mentioned. He said, I want kind of something swingy here. And they said, well, no, this is the song. And so he tried to shut down the recording session. Wow. And they pushed him physically out of the recording studio.
God for musicians.
What happens when the business people start trying to infiltrate the artistic people?
He was physically, the head of ABC Records hated the song so much during the recording that they pushed him out of the studio. And his revenge was when the record was recorded and pressed, he refused to promote it.
Buried it, huh?
He buried it. It went nowhere.
What a jerk.
And again, he did it at the peril of ABC Records' bottom line, because the record was hitting number one in places around the country, including, as I said, Great Britain. It was the number one song in 1968 over there. But it never appeared. I think it sold like 1,000 copies.
It was a standard release rotation for Armed Forces Radio. That's because it showed in Good Morning Vietnam.
By the way, in 2021, Rolling Stone ranked it the 171st greatest of the top 500 best songs of all time.
Okay, that sort of fits.
171st best song of all time. What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong. Isn't that an interesting story? I mean,
as indelible songs go, that one's up there.
So that's why I wanted to choose What a Wonderful World for this morning show, because there's a good
story behind
the song.
They love this, you know, legendary lyric concert, because we always add a story to it that we didn't know back in the day, where it was just rushed, has to be played 100 times on the air, let's make it number one. And all these years later now, we get the background, and who said no to what songs? And now a president at ABC said, not going to work.
Yes. It is 42 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. Okay. Yesterday, I was going to cover this story. I'm glad I held it for a day, because it has so much more local resonance because of what happened here. In mid-April, pro-Hamas protesters blocked traffic on the Golden Gate Bridge. And they were arrested. And the local DA had the option of dropping the charges or prosecuting the people who blocked the bridge, because they trapped people in their cars for hours. A surgeon had to scrub all of his appointments that day. There was a man with a brain tumor who was going in for a treatment, missed his treatment. The San Francisco Public Defender's Office urged the charges to be dismissed. The new DA, the interim DA, is named Brooke Jenkins. Now, you will recall a couple of years ago, because we covered this in great detail, the progressive prosecutor there named Chessa Boudin was recalled from office. He was fired by the voters of San Francisco. And she was his replacement. She worked in that office. She's charging them. Quote, "While we must protect avenues for free speech, the exercise of free speech cannot compromise public safety. The demonstration on the Golden Gate Bridge caused a level of safety risk, including extreme threats to the health and welfare of those trapped, that we cannot ignore or allow." Clearly, they're trying to deter future blockages of the Golden Gate Bridge by protesters. The public defender's office says that she's weaponizing the law. They cited a higher moral authority for the protest. And, quote, "Our attorneys intend to vehemently defend any individuals we are appointed to represent," said the public defender Manu Rahu. They had numerous warnings to disperse, but instead they blocked traffic again for hours. Eight of the defendants are facing felony
conspiracy charges. The rest, who just participated, in other words, the organizers are looking at felony charges. The rest are looking at misdemeanor charges. And the angle that I was going to use for yesterday's show was Kamala Harris should be asked, as the former San Francisco DA, do you think she made the right call in filing charges against these pro-Palestinian protesters? That's the perfect question for her to answer as she gets ready for the national convention next week in Chicago, where they expect pro-Palestinian demonstrators in the streets. But the issue took on additional local relevance because, if you hadn't heard, yesterday, prosecutors with the city of SeaTac, which has jurisdiction over the area leading to SeaTac Airport, have dismissed charges against dozens of people who blocked rush hour traffic outside SeaTac Airport. Same protest, pro-Hamas protest. I know they say pro-Palestinian, but when you say from the river to the sea and other anti-Israel, anti-Jewish slogans and chants, then you're really showing where you're coming from. You're pro-Hamas. Those charged have been told that they can file for immediate dismissal of their charges if they do 10 hours of community service or if they simply don't step on SeaTac Airport property, unless they're traveling, for 3 months. Those charged were, of course, more than eager to take the deal. But look at the contrast. In liberal San Francisco, the DA charges pro-Palestinian protesters who blocked the Golden Gate Bridge. In SeaTac, the prosecutor has dropped charges against 46 demonstrators who blocked access to SeaTac Airport. And if you wonder again why the forces of chaos, disorder, and lawlessness continue to reign here in the Puget Sound area, there's your answer. Even in San Francisco, they're now enforcing criminal laws against people who deliberately, repeatedly ignore orders to disperse and deliberately block people from getting to their flights and block access to the airport for people who are working, pilots, flight attendants, staff, and others who hold jobs at the airport itself. Anyway, that tells you, again, everything that is wrong here in the Seattle area. We are now behind San Francisco. And we're in just about as deep a hole as they are as well. You're listening to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. I wonder, you know, obviously the DA in San Francisco is trying to send a message. What message do you think the SeaTac prosecutor just sent to protesters who want to block airports? There you go.